Leading off with a big story of the day, here's The Drive with Zach Bye and Denver, Colorado's own Philip Lindsay.
Who win it now?
All right, full disclosure, well, 1 hour in the books, lickety split. Full disclosure, we were supposed to be moving on to something else, and we will here in just a minute. We will here in just a minute because the NFL draft is 16 days away. That's it, Mr. Philip Lindsay.
It's around the corner.
It truly is. And where do we stand on what the Broncos should do? And how does that clash with what the Broncos will do? We polled some of our hosts here at The Fan, and we have what they said, and that got written about at DenverSports.com. So I want to go over like who's thinking what just 2 weeks ahead of the draft. But we were having the Caitlin Clark conversation, and we just got the numbers from the rating over the weekend. And we were trying to figure out, you know, it was like 2-3 weeks ago. We were like, what's the comp for Caitlin Clark? Like, when is the last time a college, and we kept it to basketball in that moment. So when's the last time a college basketball player was this polarizing, that moved the needle this much? And the name that we came up with was Zion Williamson. Yep. All right. And then you go back and I went back and looked at some of the ratings. It's not even in the same stratosphere. And Zion had incredible buzz. I mean, Jay-Z flew into friggin' whatever the airport is there in Durham and went in to Cameron Indoor to watch Zion play. Obama went with the Secret Service team and all that to watch Zion play. And I think that's the game where Zion blew out his shoe. Do you guys remember that game? It was like going viral. It was like a Nike shoe, whatever. But when is the last time an athlete, and this was my question going in the break, when is the last time an American athlete had people in the tens of millions hovering around a TV set where they otherwise would not be? So like, and it's got to be tens of millions. And when we went to break, we were throwing out names. KJ said Coco Gauff. Yeah. Needle mover, but not tens of millions. Tiger Woods name came up.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
And that's a really good guess. In 2019, where Tiger Woods had like the most improbable Masters win of all time, I have the numbers here from sportsmediawatch.com. 5.8 rating, which is about 10 million viewers. 10 million. That was incredible. It was a huge win for CBS. It was a huge win for the Masters. But that's hitting 10 million. We're watching something that's blowing that out by millions and millions of viewers. And I did some research this morning, and I know who it is. It's freaking Michael Phelps. It's freaking Michael Phelps.
How could you forget about Michael Phelps, Zach?
And as one singular American athlete that has everyone in the country rearranging their Saturday night in 2016, and everyone knew it was going to be his final Olympics.
Final Olympics.
Yep. Phil, over 30 million people tuned into NBC to watch his final events. And that is the last time, unless someone else can bring, you know, a name to me
that's American.
Yes, American athlete that had Americans, because these are all American numbers. Yeah. You know, these ratings.
Yeah.
You know, but you threw out a good one during the break.
Which one was it? I threw it a bunch.
Usain Bolt.
Okay, yeah. I threw out Usain Bolt, but I knew he was an American, so I forgot about it.
Yep. And
Iconic.
And I don't know if they did what Phelps did or what Clark is, because I don't have those numbers in front of me, and that'd be fun to go back and look at. But that's another one. It was like, this one person is making you rearrange your schedule.
To
watch them.
One person, there's a couple others that will do it in the country, and that's Lionel Messi and Ronaldo. Those two are going to probably break the scale. They will when they're done.
And those are global.
Global.
Yep, those are global stars, no doubt.
Crazy.
No doubt. Do you think we'll get to the Broncos here in just a minute, but do you think the success and popularity and the explosion that we've seen in the last 2 years will translate to the professional level and people will start watching WNBA games that otherwise would not because of her arrival?
Yeah, I think that they're going to definitely start. I think that they're going to definitely start watching these games because they want to see what Caitlin Clark is going to do. And there's been a lot of like backlash and good things going on in the talk, where there's people that want to know how she's going to do in the WNBA, because some people are coming out saying they don't think she's going to do all that well in the WNBA.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you have the other people like, you're crazy. right? So it's going to be interesting to see the transition because you still are going to the WNBA, which is another step from college.
Yes.
So I'm interested to see how that translates. But if it translates like a lot of people are thinking,
right,
it's going to be crazy.
It's going to be crazy. She's going to be the number one overall pick.
She will.
I'm sure the ratings will go up, but it's just how much. It's just how much. And what you want to know what's funny is you kind of referenced it here a second ago. The discourse around Caitlin Clark and a lot of it, and I just find this interesting, it's coming from other women. Like when you would think it'd be like empowering one another and like you've asked for more eyeballs and this has been incredible. And it's like Diana Taurasi.
Yeah. Well, going out there. Yeah.
It's like, well, see, she's doing it against kids. Like, come do it against. Like, whoa, okay.
But also, you know, Caitlin Clark broke her record. And so I think there's a little saltiness with that, you know. But for me, it's like, yo, records are meant to be broken. That's why they're there. They're records.
Sure.
They're going to be broken. Somebody is going to break your record someday, some other, you know, night. It doesn't matter. But, yeah, for her to go out there and say that, like, some things just better left unsaid. If you don't have anything good to say, you know, just leave it out there and prove it on the court or, wait until she goes to the court and then say something like, okay, she's not doing as well as in college because of this. But don't just say it out there because now you look like a hater.
Right, and you look like a hater. And here's the kicker. I'm watching Diana Taurasi give commentary about Caitlin Clark. The only reason I'm watching you is because of Caitlin Clark.
Yeah.
You came on right after the game or whatever. And so, like, you're even your platform talking into a microphone is larger because of her.
Yeah.
And but it wasn't just her. It was Lynette Woodward, who's a college basketball legend, saying she's not the real scoring champ. And then you had, what's her name, Molly Quorum from, is it Quorum from First Take? Karam from First Take saying, if Paige Beckers were healthy, we wouldn't be talking about. It's like, damn, just taking arrows from different people with microphones around the country.
But that's what happens. That's what happens when you're a good basketball player, football player, hockey player. It doesn't matter.
Yes, you're right. Right. You're
some
right.
People are going to love you. Other people are going to hate you. You need them both. You need them both because it separates a room. It splits a room. It divides a room.
Yeah.
And now you're being talked about even more, whether it's good or bad. Everybody's always talking about
it. No, Phil, you're spot on. This is what happens when you step up in popularity and you're a polarizing figure.
Mm.
You catch the strays. You get some hate. That's just what comes, especially in a social media era, you know, where everyone's got their own little microphone.
Yeah.
This is why I really appreciated Dawn Staley after the game. And I know you guys have heard the comments, and if you haven't, we'll play them for you here. But in the moment after she just dethroned Caitlin Clark and her Gamecocks became the 10th team ever in women's college basketball to run the table and win the Natty, took the time in that moment to say this.
I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport, and it just is not going to stop here on the collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in the WNBA draft, she's gonna lift that league up as well. So Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games, and we appreciate you.
That was classic.
That was. See, I would have been like this. I want to thank Caitlin Clark for absolutely nothing. We're the champions.
Oh, no.
I had to go Conor McGregor.
You
the champions do what the champions want to do.
No, I know you well enough. You would have been classy in that moment.
For sure. And then in my head, I would have been saying that.
Sure. Say that in the after party.
No, for sure. Caitlin Clark has done some great things for the women's sports, especially for the basketball, and it's only going to get better because of it.
I hope so. Real quick, Drew is in my ear. Can you just please say what you were saying in my ear?
Yeah, so that number actually, the 18.7,
which is what the championship game did on
Correct.
Saturday.
Yes, it actually is the exact same number as the college football semifinal between Texas and Washington this last year.
Wow.
And it's also 4 million more viewers than last year's men's national championship game between UConn and San Diego State.
Incredible. All right, really good stuff. Fun conversation. Man, if you would have told me that even 6 months ago, or let alone a year ago, hey, you're gonna end up talking so much women's college basketball in some way, shape, or form. You're gonna go through the segment and you're gonna go through the top of the hour because there's just more to get to. I'd have been like, what would have ever caused that? And here we are, man. So, all right, Phil, NFL draft, 16 days away. Where do we stand on what the Broncos should do? And how often does that clash with what the Broncos will do? We were asked to participate in an exercise at denversports.com.
Yep.
Headed up by editor of the site, James Merrillat. And we were asked, what will the Broncos do and what should the Broncos do? And when it came to you, what the Broncos will do is stay at 12. Yep. All right. Or trade back in the first round to accumulate more picks. But you said, I think they'll select Michael Penix Jr. even if they trade back. So taking Michael Penix Jr. at 12 or trading back, correct, accumulating picks, and then grabbing them, you think the Broncos will draft Michael Penix Jr.?
Yeah, I think that they're going to draft Michael Penix Jr. All right, so everybody can stop crying about Bo Nix because that's not going to be our quarterback. All right, and I think that if they're smart, they're either going to pick him 12, but they're going to try to move down. They're going to try to be greedy, move back, get more picks, because someone like Michael Penix Jr. may be still there because of the injury history.
Right.
So that's probably the smartest move to do, is to move down. And for me, it's Michael Penix Jr.
You know what the one risk involved with that is?
Other than the injuries?
Oh, the injuries, yeah. That's front and center, yeah. Other than the injuries.
Yeah.
If you think that guy could be a franchise quarterback, and you say, let's try to get greedy, let's move back, the Raiders are right behind you.
Mm.
And unless they move up, you don't know what they're thinking.
Yeah.
And that would be, for someone like yourself who is pounding this Michael Penix Jr. table, and I love it, but that would be some sort of miscalculation if the Broncos said, yeah, we think he's a franchise quarterback, but we'll get greedy, we'll move back, and that guy's your neighbor for the next fill-in-the-blank number of years.
Yeah. That's a risk. But that's a risk Sean's willing to take. I think for Sean, it's like nobody's going to like his injury history. And I'm confident enough that he'll be there. Now, if that's the case, though, and he feels like somebody else is going to take him like the Raiders, then he's staying at 12. There is no way, Zach, that I see the Denver Broncos right now moving up and giving up draft capital, giving up the player that the only player they have that's going to be worth anything is PS2, and they're not going to be giving him up.
Why don't you see a scenario where that happens?
I just don't see that happen. One, with the draft picks, you need them. Sean's going to be here for multiple years. Mm-hmm. He's going to need those draft picks, all right? Two, he's the best player you have right now, all right? Now, you don't have to pay him right away. He still doesn't have to be paid right away.
No.
So no. I'm gonna kind of hold that. If I'm Sean, I'm gonna kind of hold that over his head because I'm not his guy. I didn't draft him, but also I want to get the best out of him, and then maybe later on find a way to trade him for more capital later on. But I need him right now. I need him in the room. I need him in the room.
Well, the most you're gonna get for him for this point moving forward is right now, because he's still going into year four under a rookie contract, and then you can hit him with the fifth year option, which that's just the way it is. He's been great. So he'll be under team control for at least two more years before you have to pay him.
Yeah.
And I get there's a scenario where you could franchise tag, but you probably don't want to do that with a young, low-maintenance, awesome player. You could have got more if you did it last year. You'll get less if you do it 1 year from now.
Yeah.
But I look at it a little bit differently. When you talk about trading up, it's a massive risk. There's no question about it. And if you include Pat Surtain in a package, you're going to give the 12th overall pick,
mm-hmm,
next year's first round pick, and Pat Surtain. And if you don't include Pat Surtain, it's going to be the 12th overall pick, next year's first round pick, and then the year after that's first round pick. The way that I would look at it is, and me specifically, if you think a franchise quarterback that can change this organization is sitting there, let's just say at 4, because you're probably not getting the top 3.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to go with J.J. McCarthy. I think J.J. McCarthy is going to go 4th, and I think that's the most attainable pick. What are you laughing for?
Oh, he's like, yeah, to shoot that in. I'm going to go with J.J. McCarthy.
Well, who should I go with there?
No, you're right. Number 4, he's probably going to be there for a reason.
Probably.
Not number 1.
Probably.
Okay.
It's probably going to go Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy. Something crazy could happen, no doubt. But right now for this exercise, I think J.J. is going to go 4th. If Sean Payton believes that guy could change his franchise, let's just go with the picks and forget Pat Surtain, because I know that triggers a lot of people. Like you.
So three first rounds.
Three first rounds. This year's, which you're swapping to move up. Next year's first round pick and the year after. What do you think the hit rate in the first round is for a player? 40-50%? Half these guys work out?
For being really good? Maybe even less than that.
It might be.
I'm going to go probably like 30%.
Okay. So let's just be conservative and go 30-50%.
Yeah.
Is your likelihood that you freaking hit on that first rounder? He's signing a second contract. He's an awesome starter for 8-10 years, whatever it is. If it's between 30-50%, again, and it's three spins at that, who they'll pick at 12, mm-hmm. maybe it's Brock Bowers that you won't get. Next year's pick and the year after that pick, if you're telling me the probability of those first rounders are 30-50% three times versus a guy that Sean Payton feels convicted about that can change the organization play and quarterback, I understand. I don't love that it's going to take three first-round picks, and I understand why people are like, no, this organization has such a long way to go, so many holes to fill, and all that's true. And these are nuanced conversations with layers to it. I think if you put it like that, a hit rate of 30-50% three times versus a guy that Sean Payton, who we know is not going anywhere, believes can change the franchise, I think it's worth the risk, and I think it's an equal risk to not do it if that's what Sean really believes and it's attainable.
I mean, I can't argue with you with that. If Sean truly believes that this quarterback, and it's, let's say it's J.J. McCarthy, to make you feel good, I don't want to fluster you or anything like that. So it's J.J. McCarthy. Then yeah, like if it, in your heart to heart and in your gut, you just think that he's the man, then you got to go out there and get him. But just know if you go out there and you get him and the risk is bad, then we're going to be major and a major setback.
Yeah.
A setback, because we just lost three first round picks.
Yes.
You know,
it's very risky, man, and it makes even me uncomfortable here. It makes me even as I'm saying it. But if I put it all on the scale, I don't think it's I think sometimes our fear with draft picks can get just overblown, thinking that they all work out, and it's not even close to that. It's not even close.
Oh man. The only thing with this, Zach, is no matter what, he's a rookie quarterback. He's going to go through some rookie mistakes. And if you don't have anybody to surround him with, he is not going to be successful. I don't care how good you are.
You're right.
I don't care how good you are. You could be Peyton Manning. But if you ain't put around a great supporting cast, which he had two Hall of Fame receivers, one Reggie Wayne is still trying to get in. But yeah, Marvin Harrison.
Yeah.
Clark sitting right there at tight end.
Yep.
Okay, you have a center that was our coach that was not good.
Yes.
Just Saturday.
Yes.
but
I will say this. It wasn't like that when Peyton first got in the fold.
No.
Or they wouldn't have been picking number one. It was rough there.
I'm interested to see how much they gave up to get Peyton.
Well, they didn't. I don't think they gave up anything. I think they just naturally picked number one.
And see, there you go. It's easier. You know, you didn't have to give up nothing.
Yeah.
You got the number one pick, which is great. Everybody wants to have it or doesn't want to have it because that means you suck.
Correct.
But it got you Peyton Manning. For us, we're in no man's land. We're picking number 12, so we're going to have to either move up to get that franchise quarterback like you want if you think that J.J. McCarthy is the guy, or you can stay at 12 or move down, get my guy Michael Penix Jr., take off, get you a jersey,
Phil,
call it a day.
Phil, if Sean Payton believes in Michael Penix Jr., I'm on board.
I'm on board, too.
I'm on board.
Anything at this point, man, because if we have a situation, Zach, where this does not work out, where is this going? Where are we going to be at?
Phil, here's my question. Where is this operation going if they don't pick a quarterback? And they just,
I like your thought process. I was thinking in that.
Okay, perfect. So the Broncos have a ton of holes, right? And I'm looking at the article on DenverSports.com. You know, Mike and Mark were asked what they wanted to do. It's just pick a football player at 12 and address quarterback later, okay? Pick a stud, right? Okay. What's the organizational plan at quarterback?
Yeah, where are we going?
And I'm not calling them crazy because they're not. The Broncos are not in an advantageous position to pick a quarterback
for sure.
Unless you love Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr. In that case, it's great. But if it's not, what's the plan at quarterback? Jarrett Stidham is not a plan. Drafting someone in the third or fourth round, that's a flyer you take, and I agree you should build the quarterback room, but that's not a big boy $5 billion organizational plan. And I just want to know if your plan is to just draft a football player, who's playing quarterback for the Denver Broncos, and when does the quarterback position get resolved?
Well, that's
my question.
Yeah, the quarterback position is the number one position you have to have if you're going to be successful. It starts with the quarterback position, then defense trickles down to the defensive side. But if you don't have a quarterback, if you don't have a starting point, you can't get started. You can't get started. And at least if we go and draft a quarterback, it's telling us we're trying to start. If you don't draft a quarterback, that means that you're not trying. You're hoping that someone like Jared Stidham ends up developing into a quarterback that we did not think he was going to be, and we're just going to risk that. I'd rather risk it on a young quarterback, okay, take the lumps, grow with him, groom him, and all of a sudden, 2-3 years from now, he's that franchise quarterback that we're looking back and saying, Sean Payton was a smart move, and he is the guru when it comes to picking a quarterback. But if he doesn't do that, where are we at? I don't know where we're at. I think we're getting closer and closer to being irrelevant.
Yeah, and that's what the Broncos are now. That's what the Broncos are right now. Seriously, that's where they live in the NFL consciousness. They are in the blind spot. And Phil, like, I would honestly rather watch Sean Payton draft Michael Penix at 12, draft Bo Nix at 12, than just kicking the can down the road.
I agree with you.
Because where does that road lead?
It doesn't lead us anywhere.
Tanking the season in advance? Who is it? Dak Prescott's going to become available and sign with the Broncos? I just don't know what the plan is.
I don't see that. Sean is too much into his legacy, too much into who he is to tank a season. And I don't think anybody wants to tank a season because it doesn't look good on your resume. It doesn't look good as a player, even though you're not part of it because you're trying to play your heart out. For these coaches to sit back there for 17 games and be okay with losing, like, that's frustrating and that's sick if that's happening. Because who can do that? Truly, like, who can sit there and lose games just to lose them and be okay getting on that plane? Zach, it's one of the most miserable times is when you lose a game and you got to go home on a flight. And if you get blown out and you have people laughing or giggling like it didn't matter to them, you just want to get out that seat and slap the you-know-what out of them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like, if you're willing to do that and just tank the season, like, that's not good for us. And I don't see Sean doing it.
I don't see that either. And guess what? This idea that just Sean can lose a ton of games and doesn't matter because he's under contract.
He can't.
No. Nope. It's not going to work like that. That's something easy to say in March or April. Not in September. Not when the games kick off. So what's the plan at quarterback? 16 days before the draft. We're still unsure. See if... any second we could get trade news, Broncos trading up, maybe it's the Vikings trading up, Raiders trading up, don't know, but we're on the doorstep of finding out. All right, the national championship on the men's basketball side is tonight. How do we think the television rating will do put up against Caitlin Clark and South Carolina? We'll take some guesses coming up next. Let's come off the top rope with it.
One!
Okay. The national championship game tonight, men's basketball. Couple questions about this game.
Uh-oh.
It's number one UConn versus number one Purdue in the Natty.
The national championship, baby.
We got the numbers in the last hour for the women's national championship, and it averaged, what did we say, 18.7 million. It's the most watched game of all time.
Caitlin Clark tweeted it.
By millions, yes, yes.
She tweeted 18.7. Fire emoji, because she knows.
Yeah, she knows.
The men know.
No, we know the men aren't going to come close to that. But my question where do you think, how many millions of Americans do you think this will average tonight? The women's did 18.7.
Yeah.
What do you think tonight's broadcast will average?
Man, this is a tough one, Zach, because truly, me sitting right here, and I watch basketball, not to the extent like you do, okay? But I couldn't tell you one single person on UConn's team, right? And I could only tell you one person on Purdue's team tonight.
Mm.
And I think that if you put out a poll, a lot of people will be the same way. You just want to see a good game, right? You want to see a great game, but you don't know these players. Therefore, the viewers are not going to be as high as you want it to be because there's not just one singular person that's dominate like Caitlin Clark did.
Right.
So I'm going to say, after all that, 10.1 million views.
I like that. I'm not even going to add to that. I think it's going to be right around, I'd say 9 to 11 million viewers.
Okay.
Which is an even earshot of what the women just did. And to your kind of assertion there that you don't know anyone from UConn, Memphis, and you're admitting you're not a huge college junkie, but guess what? Neither is most of our country right now.
Yeah.
This sport, it makes me sad because it's never been less popular. And guess who I'm looking at? The mirror. I've never watched less men's college basketball this year than ever before this year. And do I know some more of the players? Sure. But at the same time, I think if you asked an average sports fan, not a college basketball fan, just your average American sports fan, if they could name three players in the national, this is the national championship where you've got to know them over the last month.
Yeah.
These are not, you're not trying to figure out who VCU is or George Mason. These are number one seeds who have done a lot of winning, not just this year, but in the last couple years in Purdue and UConn. And if you put the number at 2.5, I take the under. I think most American sports fans cannot name three players in tonight's game.
And that's sad. And that's sad. And all I can say for is that is like we're not putting it out there to learn these players' names or to see what they really have to offer us, right? When Steph Curry was in college, everybody was viewing it.
Oh, you see?
Because he's baby-faced. Yep. Right, he was from Davidson. Yep. Was it Davidson?
Yeah.
You know, it was just this guy that shouldn't have been there. He's skinny, he's small, but he shoots the heck out the ball. Everybody wanted to see it.
Yeah.
Right? Zion was another one. Like, he's just a freak of nature. But that's not what you have here anymore. It's not somebody that you could just say, okay, like I said, that's Caitlin Clark, and everybody wants to view it because it's her last game of the year.
But what's crazy is Zach Edey is not just the player of the year. He's a two-time player of the year. I think he's like the first two-time player of the year since, like, Ralph Sampson. I mean, it should be, there should be, and UConn's going for back-to-back.
Yeah.
It should check more boxes. But it just, for whatever reason, it just doesn't. So we'll see what happens tonight. We'll see what the rating is. It'll likely come out while we're on the air tomorrow, and we'll pass it along as soon as we have it.
1, 2!
Jamal Murray returned to the Denver Nuggets over the weekend. They rolled the Atlanta Hawks.
Choo-choo!
Jamal coming back. Bench played well.
Yeah.
Aaron Gordon got the night off. So you're kind of eating with two spoons. You're kind of resting some of your guys, bringing a guy back. What'd you make of that route over the weekend against Atlanta?
Dominant. Dominant performance. All right. The Stars didn't have to show up for too long. They played 25 minutes maybe was the most Jokic played. Went for his triple-double. Jamal looked good. I was waiting to see like a little hitch in his step. A little rusty, but no. And I guess for me, I said this before, if Jamal was going to play, and we were talking about the Spurs might be the best game for him to play because he's not going to have to play that long, okay? But he can get acclimated, get his feet wet in a game where they know they're going to win. This is kind of the same with the Hawks, Atlanta. They did a good job of implementing him in this game plan where he didn't have to take on the load. He didn't have to play for that long, but got enough in there to get his feet back wet.
Phil, I absolutely love it. Full cosign to everything you said last week, tying in the outlook when we didn't know if he was going to play against San Antonio. Same thing. No, like, vigorous defender.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, they're in the Eastern Conference playoff picture. But they're not to be taken seriously.
No, not right now.
So I agree. It was the perfect reintroduction game for Jamal Murray. And how about the bench? Now, I don't want to take one game and cast it and say this is who it is moving forward, because I just, you know, we've been around the block too many times with this conversation. But over the weekend, the bench was phenomenal in one of their best outings of the season.
Yeah, I mean, everything seems to be different when Jamal's back in the game, because guess what? Everybody gets pushed down. Everybody gets put back in their place where they're supposed to be and starring in their role, which makes everything a lot better, because now you're not having somebody that does not usually carry the load forcing things. Christian Brown, you don't have to force anything anymore. Right. Just play great defense, and when you're in there, make some shots when it counts. Peyton Watson, play great defense, bring them an explosive plays. Like I said, the blocks, explosive highlights, okay, and shoot when you're open. And Jamal Murray and the rest of the starters, they handled the rest.
Yeah, Peyton Watson, most blocks coming off the bench since like 2016 when Yusef Nurkic was still in the fold here in Denver. Really something to build off. And we'll have a more expansive conversation on the Nuggets here shortly.
1, 2, 3!
And then, Phil, the other tenant of Ball Arena, the Colorado Avalanche, different type of story. Lose back-to-back games in blowout fashion, and what's old is new again. In the conversation between the pipes, is Georgie, does he have the chops to start the playoffs here in the next couple weeks? Not all his fault yesterday. But it was an ugly watch in Edmonton on Friday.
Yeah.
Rocky road here. Bumpy.
It really is, Zach. And you guys have talked about this before in the past about having a goalie controversy during the playoffs. We want to kind of stay away from that. But if Georgiev cannot get his act together, and I don't want to put it all on him because versus the, you know, the Dallas Stars, it wasn't all on him. The defense did not tighten up. The defense is not doing well. We need the defense to play well. I think Georgiev will play well because Georgiev didn't have a bad game. Okay, and Bednar said it earlier that he didn't have a bad
no,
game.
No, no.
But also, I think that Bednar is pushing for Georgiev to play and giving him that confidence that he's willing to say things that he doesn't believe is, as well.
Well, we'll see. And that word belief. That's an interesting question.
It is.
How much belief, forget the fans, forget me and you.
Yeah.
How much belief is there internally that they have a goaltender that they can win a Stanley Cup with? I have my doubts. They need to tighten up defensively because that was ugly last night on multiple fronts. But you want to know what else was ugly, Phil? Is special teams.
Hmm.
I mean, Dallas going 3-for-3.
Yeah.
And the double minor just killed it. If you watched the game, you saw it because it was on the front half of the double minor, which the penalty time stays on the clock, and they scored again, and it was like just...
It was getting out of hand at that time.
It was. The Avs just have a couple games left to figure it out, and we will also circle back to that conversation here in just a few minutes. But in the meantime, this spring, Philip Lindsay and I are hitting the streets. And we're taking our show on the road. It's the Drive's Brouhaha. All right. It's a brewery tour. Our first stop is in Edgewater at Edgewater Beer Garden. And we're going to be there Friday, April 19th from 2 to 6. Head to denversports.com/drive for more details. Okay. Denver sports fans, prepare to hunker down. For what? Tell you next.
Ain't that the reason you're at this club? Oh, you ain't gon' find a dance with him. No, I got a better solution for you, girl. Oh, just leave with me now, say the word and we'll go.
Denver sports fans, prepare to hunker down. Tried to deny it, tried to ignore it. Didn't want to accept the fate that was 100% coming.
Uh-oh.
Man, Phil, we need to prepare ourselves, quite literally.
Uh-oh.
For one of the worst Denver sports seasons of all time. For one of the worst Denver sports seasons of all time.
I wish we could replay what we said Friday.
We can get it because, well... What part?
Where we're going crazy.
Oh, yes. If we at some point, if the fellas behind the glass don't have too much going on, when we came back at the bottom of the last hour.
Yeah.
And Ryan McMahon had just hit a walk-off grand slam.
Yeah.
Which I don't care who you are. That is one of the coolest opening day finishes that you could have. Like, how could it be better?
Yeah, there's no way it could be better.
Walk-off grand slam. But they played more games after that, which was the problem.
But we talked about, for us is we said it's one game at a time. We're talking about one game.
Yes.
We didn't talk about the season.
We did get caught up a little bit.
We did get caught up. It's like going to that Rager drunk and then the next day waking up like, yes. What just happened?
Yes. And a shout out, I think they must have already had a poll that they...
Somebody must have been making jokes with us if it's already pulled.
They have the audio. This was, and again, I have not heard this since we said it. So see how dumb we sound on Friday live from El Patio, getting caught up in the opening day atmosphere after Ryan McMahon's walk-off grand slam.
Guess what? Speaking of Stoke and Josh and Mike and Mark, you know, Mike and Mark adopted a baseball team, the Orioles.
They did.
Stokely and Josh adopted the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah.
You want to know what I think we should do?
Who are we adopting?
Not adopting a damn thing.
Ooh.
I'm a Colorado Rockies fan.
Let's go.
And I will be here in the storm. And I will learn how to dance in the rain. You will not see me wearing Orioles gear. You will not see me wearing Braves gear.
Let's go.
I'm going to wear my tattered Colorado Rockies gear.
Oh, no. Yet. Zach got his shirt off.
We've been through the ringer.
He got it. Into the crowd.
But guess what?
He's crowd surfing.
Tough times don't last, and tough people do, Phil.
Sellout.
Not bailing on the Colorado Rockies.
It sounded like a good idea at the time.
It sounded like a good time.
It really did. It really did. And that was, and by the way, that was before the Grand Slam. Now just take that energy up a notch after the Grand Slam.
You hear the music in the background. Oops,
oh, yeah, yeah. And my heart was doing it too. I'm like, we got this. We're good. We're good.
That's some techno stuff.
Goodness gracious. What a party on Friday. Oh my gosh.
It was, man.
It was such a fun time. And shout out to all the listeners that came to El Patio Denver and showed love. It was a hoot and a half. The Rockies did go on to lose the next two games. All right. And here's just the facts. They're 2-8. All right. That's tied for the worst start through 10 games in the history of the team, going back to 2005. All right. Yesterday, the Rockies struck out 15 times. All right. Their offense is supposed to be the strong suit. Okay. Yeah. That's when you know you're in trouble.
This was holding them down right now.
That's how you know you're in trouble. The loss, and this is hard to believe, and I can't believe it's true. The loss yesterday marked the 16th straight game. Do we know this? The 16th straight game in which the other team scored first. Did you guys realize that behind the glass? No? Yeah. 16 games where the other team has scored first. You have to go back to the 1989 San Francisco Giants.
1989?
Yes. That's a Taylor Swift album.
Yeah.
All right? You got to go back to 1989 to the San Francisco Giants to find another team who had allowed the opposition to score score first in 16 straight games. So they're historic already on multiple levels. And Chris Bryant already sat out Saturday with a tight back.
Oh, a tight back.
And he was already benched a game to give it a... So in the first 10 games, the $28 million player this year has gotten a day off when he's been healthy and has taken a separate day off because he's got a tight back. You can't make this up.
And he's been booed.
Yes. Yes.
If people know, if people don't know, he was booed before he had a home run.
Yes, he was booed on opening day, and guess what? He was booed yesterday again.
He's going to be booed again and again and again.
That's unusual, though, for Rockies fans to boo like their own guy like that.
They're fed up, Zach. They truly are. At this time, it's sickening. And it's sickening because, guess what, Zach? We didn't do anything to help our case in the offseason. We didn't add anybody. We had a couple trades. That was about it. We didn't add anybody to help us out. And now look at where we're at. We're 2-8. 2-8.
Yep. If things keep trending like this, this will go down as one of the worst Denver sports seasons of all time. And we did a segment on Thursday, I think, how bad would it have to get to be the worst Denver sports season of all time, which is like the 1997-98 Denver Nuggets that went, I think it was 11-71 under Bill Hanslick's 1 year here. And I mean, they can't be that bad. It's almost impossible for baseball teams.
Because they would have to go 35?
No, I think it was 25. I think they had to go like 25 and like 130, whatever the difference is, to make up 172.
Do you still think that they're gonna win 50 games? Zach, 50 games.
Gosh, you have to be so bad to win less than 50 games. But if anyone can do it, if anyone can pull it off, it feels like these Rockies.
See, that's not... Usually when someone says, if somebody can do it, it's Zach Bye. Because he's the greatest to ever do it. This is different.
No, wait, guys. I can give you guys a dose of optimism, okay?
Okay,
you brought up the 1989 San Francisco Giants, okay, being that team that gave up, you know, led the league and allowed the team to score first run. Do you know what the Giants did that year, 1989?
Hold on, the 1989 Giants.
Yep, and I think I said New York Giants. I meant San Francisco Giants.
Had an earthquake that demolished the stadium.
That is,
couldn't play.
Well, they did have an earthquake. It did not demolish the stadium.
Okay,
but they did that in the World Series.
That's right. Mm.
They won the National League pennant that year.
Stop.
They did.
Wait a second. So the 1989 Giants, who had 16 consecutive games where the other team scored first, went on to win?
Yep, the National League pennant.
NL pennant?
Yep. Now they got beat by Oakland in the World Series.
Oh, so that literally was the earthquake series.
Okay.
I shouldn't have said that. Because I forget if people,
That's so long ago.
Yeah, okay, yeah. A long time ago.
So see, there you go. A little optimism for your ride or die Colorado Rockies there.
Wow.
I know. I don't even believe it either. But
wow.
Yeah.
All right.
So you're saying there's a chance.
for whatever reason, if this continues this pace, they would be on they would be on pace to have the worst record in baseball since the 1899 Cleveland Spiders.
Oof.
So, okay, that's where we're at. All right, shifting gears here. What does the heavyweight champion of the boxing world have to do with the Denver Broncos? We'll tell you coming up next.